Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Faithless, the radio show where we listen to your voice and talk about the corruption we all face every day in our courts. America's courts have largely been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the color of law to defraud their victims of life, property, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We, the people, must confront the perpetrators of these crimes to have any hope of creating transparency and accountability in our courts and repairing our broken legal system. We stand with you to create this accountability. It's time to face us. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Face Us Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed, and this is the Inside Scoop. Today is May 3rd, 2023. My name is Robin Austin, and I'm with my co-hosts tonight.
Oh, I'm Luann Fleming. I'm here tonight with Robin Austin, of course. And we're also joined here with Hillary Hope tonight. And well, let me get her on the line here. And we gave Marcy the night off. She is as well, very well deserved. So Marcy,
yes,
has the night off. And we have Hillary Hope that's joining us. Hillary, say hello to everyone.
I am here. And I am here. I've been a little under the weather, but I'm back and ready to kick some ass. And as they would say in New York, face me, mother effer, you know? So that's what they are going to do, and that's what we have been trying to make them do, some of us longer than others. I've been in whatever you want to call this activism outfit for just over 5 years. April 24th, my father, Albert William Hogue, was supposed to be adjudicated and made a ward of the state. Miraculously, I got him out. There was no magic bullet. I don't know why. I just think it was divine intervention. I'm not a religious person, but I think that it was in order for me to find my purpose in life, and that is helping people who are going through, without a doubt, the worst situation in their life, and they feel helpless, and they have no one to turn to, no one to talk to, and we have given them that outlet with this show, with Facebook, now Twitter, and we know what they're going through, and we never forget. It's never far from our minds. Every single day that goes by, 5 years, I think of it every single day, and I can say this with 100% certainty. It should have never happened to my father, and it should never have happened to the majority of people that are living this nightmare. But onward we will travel, because we will not be stopping, correct, Robin and Luann, until we get justice. People find out what is going on in our probate courts throughout this country, because, brother, it ain't good. So thanks again for having me on. And again, you were a lifeline to me when I had no one. This radio show and Robin and Luann, you were my lifeline from keeping me going over the edge at my worst. So thank you so much.
You know.
There
well,
you
it,
go.
It's certainly a mutual admiration society we've got going here, because you are one of the strongest and most prolific advocates that we've spawned in working
that's
with
right,
lots of people over the years. You know, that's
yep,
it's really it's been a great joy to see how you lifted yourself up from, you know, really being the same place where we were when we started, which was beat down and scared and mad and saying, I'm not going to put up with this. How can I not put up with this? What can I do? And we answered our own question by saying, you know what? Let's talk to people about it. Let's make a radio show about this so that other people can at least know what the truth is around this. And
mm-hmm.
maybe they'll be able to help themselves. Maybe
right.
they'll be able to protect themselves better than we were, because these court predators, as we have come to know them, they take advantage of the naivete. They take advantage of the inexperience. They take advantage of people not knowing the law and not knowing how to apply the law to themselves. And they use that advantage in the same way that any ordinary thug or criminal would do it. They bludgeon you with the force, with the power of force that they have, that they could get authorized by a judge because they are doing it under the color of law, so they can get armed men to come to your house to take you out of your house.
Mm-hmm.
On the slightest pretext, we've discovered that it doesn't have to be that you really do need a guardian or need help. It can be just a pretext that someone fabricates because you have what they want, and they figure out, oh, I can get that from them if I just lock them into a facility, and I can do that by getting my good friend here,
yeah,
who wears a black dress to bang his wooden hammer and say that it's okay. And so the man with a little wooden hammer bangs it in the black dress, and all of a sudden it's legal
for
you
doing.
To be kidnapped and use the police, bring armed men to your house, separate you from your property, take you away from your family, lock you away where you can't, and you don't get a phone call. You don't get the rights of a prisoner because you're not a prisoner. You've been guardianized.
Right.
And this guardianization is temporary. Yeah, temporary, they say.
Whatever.
It,
right.
wasn't that a wicked laugh? Because that
it was
is
a great,
really...
It was a great laugh. Great laugh. But let
it's
me just
representative
say this.
Of their attitude, which is
yes.
They're laughing all the way and... while they're abusing and using and harming and trafficking in human beings and taking from people their property, their livelihood, their relationships, their pets, killing their pets, locking them up, just squeezing the life out of them as long as there's any life to be squeezed,
okay,
using up all the money that they have, then bringing the family who's trying to defend them into an arena where they can defraud them of what they rightfully are entitled to and take the money that they bring to court to try to protect themselves, to try to protect their families. They can take that money too. And, you know, now you're in it not only for the inheritance that you would have gotten because your parents saved all their lives and were frugal and wise and careful with their money, and they built up some to give to their children. Not only is that gone, but whatever you've been able to accumulate in your life, because you are also frugal and smart in some of your choices, and you've built up a little, now you've got to go and try to defend your parents against these fraudsters that have them locked up and they're squeezing the life out of them. And
right.
And now you're trying to protect yourself, and then you discover, gosh, there's nothing to be done. These people have all the power. These judges simply authorize whatever they want to authorize. The court-appointed officials have the police on their side. They are, you know, and all of the agencies that you might think are there to protect the average citizen have been captured by the same criminals that are running the courts. So you go to adult protective services, and what they do is make sure that the people that have your parents get to keep them, and that the money that your parents own gets divvied up to the people that are it's intended for in the court, not in the family. And you go to child protective services. Well, oftentimes, probably more times than not, it would seem to us who have a radio show about the abuses, children wind up in a worse situation because these agents got involved and changed their circumstances, and now they're controlling the
That's
child and using it
me.
As property, using that child as property that is an asset that they're also squeezing. This is the kind of crime that we are here to fight. Welcome to Face Us Radio. We want you to come and face us because we're standing up to what other people are facing as well. We are the voice of those people that don't have a voice because it's been robbed from them along with their identity because they're guardianized. And now that court-appointed person who has sometimes no association with them at all, other than they're a professional appointed by the court to come in and take control of that person, bodily control. In other words, I bring the police to your house, I snatch you up, you're not allowed a phone call, you may be allowed a small bag, but you go with us. We're taking you. We're locking you up.
This is really happening. We want our listeners to understand.
I'm not exaggerating.
This happened.
This is just true appraisal.
Robin, can you hear me? My question to Robin Austin is, are they really professionals? What qualifications do these, let's just start with the guardians, have in Florida? You can be working as a cashier at Wendy's. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It's a great job, but you can be working there. And a 40-hour course, one work week, just visualize that, a week of work. And the next day, you can have full access of a millionaire or someone middle class or on the lower end of their life. Forget about their money, their person. You don't like what color lipstick the woman has on? You can get an attitude and give her one as well. So these are not professionals. We keep calling them professionals because I don't know why, but they are not professionals. So please, friends.
I can tell you who is a professional guardian. I can tell you I ended up being a professional guardian. I can call myself twice. I did a remarkable job, and that's what I am going to be doing on this radio show tonight.
Right. This is one of the things that when we were talking about what we wanted to talk about tonight, Luann said, you know, honey, this right now, today, tonight, this is the anniversary of when my husband, Michael, passed away.
Yeah, 18 years ago today in my front yard, in his... So I wanted to give a detail, and I'll read the promo of the show so everybody can get an idea of what happened. But I wasn't only through this with my mom and their whole estate, but with my husband and my family.
That was like 20 years before.
That was 20 years before. So I want to give the detail of what it was back then and how it is now. If you end up into a divorce court or a probate court, it could be totally different. I wanted to give everybody the idea and that there is hope when you get into these courts. I mean, there's always hope. You can always try to get your parent out, your loved one out. But in my instances, it was my husband, too. He was guardianized. And somehow, I ended up becoming the guardian of him. And I wasn't even sure what a guardian was at the time. I wasn't even sure what was going on because they said you have to have a guardian and a conservator. I'm like, what's this? I have no idea. So I was new to it. But I'm going to give you the promo first. And then I want you to come on, Hillary, after a while and talk about what happened to the cases that we were listening to this week earlier, how they were postponed and everything. Okay, so first of all, we're going to talk about when courts violate the family circle. There are times when it's appropriate for courts to become involved in our lives. There are times, however, when unscrupulous individuals use court actions to violate and destroy family ties to divide and conquer. Tonight, Luann, me, I will be telling the story of when I became a guardian of my husband, Michael, who passed away 18 years ago today after 28 years of marriage. Luann's father-in-law was the retired chief of police and became the conservator. I became the guardian. I don't know how that was possible, but it happened 20 years ago. Under the same took away our probate case about 20 years later, or about 10 years, according to that. So I'll get into that after a while. I'm asking, did his position make a difference? And I'll tell you all that in a while.
Yeah, the father-in-law being the ex-chief of police of the city of Aurora,
mm-hmm.
That may have had a bearing on why the court case came out the way that it did.
Right. But for Luann and her family, I could tell you it was a difficult time. However, the courts operated back then ethically, I say. So, but I'm going to give the contrast with this that what happened with when my father died and the courts got involved in 2010 with the family trust, I will go in to talk about how I became the co-guardian of my mother with my sister Ruth. And we fought to get our mom back, but our legacy, family legacy, was destroyed by another interlopers or intervention, I can call mm-hmm. them. But, you know, so I wanted to basically talk about how it was 20 years ago. And I know a lot of people talk about how probate courts have not been good for 20 years. But in my case, it went okay with my husband. Now, before my husband, we were married 28 years, had a couple kids. And he ended up, and I've had a lot of people come onto our radio show about how my husband was in a workman's comp case, and he got hurt at his job. He was in a car accident, and he hurt his back really bad. He ended up having surgery, and for some reason after that injury, he just was not the same. There's something that was going on with him. I could never pinpoint it, but my girlfriend, we went to the hospital one night, and we thought he had a mini stroke or something because he wasn't breathing right. He wasn't looking right. We asked the nurses, and they were like, oh, no, that's normal. But I, for some reason, I think something happened to him. So soon after that, he was awarded like $90,000 for that accident. And then it kept getting deeper and deeper. I almost lost my home. He wasn't acting well, my husband, Michael. He got really, really sick. And he filed for a divorce on me, and I could never understand why he did that. But after a while,
there must have been something wrong with him.
Yeah, and you know, I was a really good wife. I did everything I had to. He was a construction worker. He did a good job. You know, he was in construction, and he put a lot of siding on homes. He was really good at what he did. But he became ill after that, and he didn't go back to work for, I would say, went into 2 years, and went into 3 years, and then he got really bad. But he ended up in many, many different places. He ended up in this mental health hospital where they told me he thought that he had frontal lobe brain damage. And I looked at them people like they were insane. How does a 48 or 46-year-old person get dementia at 46, 47, 48 years old? I was just by my side. I mean, I could not believe that. I even told him that they didn't know what they were talking about. I finally got him home from the hospital looking at a teapot for 24 hours. I'm like, something's wrong with this man. I wasn't sure what was going on with him. But, you know, and he was a very respected man at his job. He did a crew of like 15 cruise people where they were doing siding on homes, and he was the head of all that. He was the head honcho at these places. So he was a very well-respected man, but I could not figure out what was going on with him. But somehow he decided to file for a divorce on me, and I'm not sure why that happened, but he filed for divorce that day. Bam, he came home and walked in the house that day and acted like nothing happened. And I'm like, what are you doing here? And he goes, I come to eat dinner. And I said, you filed for divorce today? And he goes, yes, I did. And I said, why'd you do that? He goes, I'm not sure. I'm like, what do you mean you're not sure? You know, all this behavioral problems start happening, and I was trying to figure out how could this be going on. And my kids were like, going, what is going on with Dad? And I'm like, I don't know what's going on with Dad. But we ended up getting into all kinds of problems. He went in and put in a no contact order against me. I had a restraining order against him, and it kept going stronger and stronger. And he didn't even know why he was even doing some of this, trying to protect myself and my kids. And the saddest thing about all that is the restraining orders. He would come back to my house after there was a restraining order, and if you violate that, both of you could go to prison. And it was really bad because I couldn't say, well, my husband's here, because I felt so sorry for him, because there was something not stable with him. He was not the man I married 25 years ago. He was, you know, before that. So I really take it seriously that when someone says that there's a brain injury or something, you really have to be kind to that person. And I did. We did everything we could to keep, you know, my husband here, but he would just take off and he would be gone for days and days. And no one knew where he was. So guess what? The courts could not settle this case without going to court. And they went ahead and said, well, we have to get a guardian and a conservator. And I'm like, what in the heck is that?
And if I can round it out a little, that so what happened then was that some of the attorneys that he was working with realized that he was having difficulty with his brain function.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized that he wasn't really running all cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
And so they realized he's in trouble.
Right. And they would go down to the jail, because he was in jail, locked up a couple of times because he was in probation, for violating some of these orders that he could do. And they would go down there and he'd be rhyming these weird sentences, and they were like, you know what? We can't give him a divorce because he's not in his right mind. And I'm like, duh. Do you think you think so? So they said, well,
I have to tell you that.
Yeah. So they said, well, we're going to have to go to court for us to release this money. We have to find a conservator or a guardian. And I told them, well, I could be the conservator and the guardian. They said no, because he filed a divorce against you. And I'm like, well, so. But they said that we can find somebody else, and it came to be that his father-in-law was his father was the chief of police. And they said that would work, and his dad decided to do that. And then
by that time he was retired, right?
He was retired.
Yeah.
And they came up to me and they said, well, we have to have a guardian. And this is the first time I've heard of a guardian. This was 20 years ago. I had no idea what a guardian was. And we went to court that day, and I was scared to death. I was shaking in my drawers, I tell you. And my husband actually was in jail, and they brought him out to me to the court while he had handcuffs on. And he was, like, crying, and they were asking what's wrong with him. He goes, why am I here? And I'm like, we really couldn't talk to him. So they brought him up there, and they asked him, who do you want to be your guardian? He goes, I don't want no one being my guardian. I don't need a guardian. Well, we're going to have your wife be your guardian. He jumped up and he says, I don't want my wife in there. She's not nice to me. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is just crazy. But they ended up appointing my father-in-law as the conservator. And they released the funds, and I became the guardian. I remember going up to the stand, and I raised my hand, and they said, Luann, will you take on the honor of a professional guardian? And can you take care of your husband? And I'm like, I would love to take care of my husband, but isn't that what I've been doing this whole month for 28 years? Isn't that what a guardian does? And they said, well, you have to look after that person. I said, what do you think a wife does? You know, but the problem is they gave me the guardianship, but guess what? I was in 5 different courtrooms at the same time. My husband got me into court in 5 different litigation cases. So for me to be a guardian, I had
to... So the judge said to you, he offered you the guardianship. He said, you know, I want you to be a guardian.
Mm-hmm. I accepted.
And then you said, there's a problem, though, because I can't be around my husband legally because... he has a restraining order against me. Something like that. Whatever.
Yeah.
Tell that
story. Well, the judge says, well, you're going to have to take care of that with all the other courts, but this court is nominating you as the guardian. We see that you're capable of being the guardian. And then we all walked out, and everybody, his family, the attorneys, everybody apologized to me for all the problems that they caused me, because they finally figured out he was not right. And he needed help. Mike needed help because he couldn't take control of the money. He couldn't take care of his family. So I had to step up as the good guardian and go to every single one of them courtrooms and tell them, I am the guardian of my husband Can you please release the restraining order? Can you please release me in the victim's court? Can you please release me into the as a representative? Can you please release me as the successor? Can you please release me as in the restraining order and the no contact order? And then he was also in a fight with this man in my house, and he had assault charges, and I had to go and get the assault charges dropped. And then I had to go and find where all of his vaults were around that, around the neighborhood. I couldn't find his truck. I didn't know where anything was. So as a good guardian, which I'm thankful I became the guardian, I had to straighten all that out. That's the difference between a for-profit guardian and a good guardian, is because I actually took care of my ward, my husband. I took care of him. I got everything straightened out. I worked with the conservator. We paid his bills. We paid everything off. We did as much as we can. But remember, this was 20 years ago, okay? And I have the same judge.
More than 20 now.
20, more than 20. It was, yeah, he's been gone 18 years, so I would say 23 years ago. So I've been in the probate arena for over 20 years. But I figured out finally what it was all about. I had no idea. And then after we ended up, got really, really sick, and his dad was the conservator, my son called me one day and said, Mom, Dad's sleeping out in the driveway. You need to come home. And so I drove home from my mother's house, and I came home. I drove wildly, and I came home, and I parked the car, and I thought, boy, look at the truck. It's not just, it's so strange. And I went up to the side of the truck. I parked my car. It was parked halfway into the driveway, halfway out on the side of the street. And I thought, he must be sleeping in that truck, man. So I opened up the truck, and I looked at him, and he had a big burn in the side of his pants, right through his jacket, right through his pants. And I'm like, oh, my God, the cigarette was still burning. So I pulled that off of him, and I looked at him. I said, come on, Mike, you've got to go into the house. You've got to go in right now. He did not answer me. And I looked at him, and he was completely blue, no eyes. It was one of the saddest things I've ever seen in my entire life. And I still have that same vision, the same vision that I saw. It's still there. It never goes away. And so I just said, oh, my God, I think he's dead. I called up my mom, and I said, Mom, I think Mike's dead. And she goes, what do you mean he's dead? I said, he's gone. I don't know what's going on. So I ran into the house. I got the phone, and I called 911. Mom said, call 911, and I went and I said, Jason, my son, you've got to come help me. I think something's wrong with your dad. I think he's dead. And he just looked at me, and we went out to the car, and we pulled him out of the truck, and he just fell out of the truck. And one of his friends was coming down the street. He helped us pull him out of the truck, and I was on top of him, beating him, like trying to get a heartbeat back on him.
You dragged him into the yard.
I dragged
right?
him into the yard with three of us, and I was jumping on him. And by then, I called the police, and I told them that we need to get a rest truck there right away. And so they came, and I was on top of my husband. I was beating on his chest, and they dragged me off of him. And they said, ma'am, step away, step away. And they thought that I killed him or something. I don't know what it was, but the police took me, and I said, he's dead. Can't you see he's dead? And they're saying, now we can't say that he's dead until we take him to a hospital and pronounce he's dead. I said, look, he's dead, man. And I was screaming. I was screaming on top of my lungs. And finally my father-in-law showed up, and my mother-in-law showed up, my sister showed up, and everybody showed up. And I was like so shocked that I did go into a shock. My son was shocked, and thank God my daughter wasn't around, because she would have never known what was going on. And that was one of the hardest days of my life. And nowadays, when I have a really hard day, I'll say, was it as bad as that day I found my husband dead? No. Well, I can go on. So that's I've always compared my days to that from then on. But remember, this is 20 years ago, and I still want to give people hope that things can happen for the best. And thank God that his dad turned into the conservator and I became the guardian, because it could have been so much worse. You know,
well,
your
father-in-law really cared about his son.
He did.
And he did his best to be a really good conservator, and he was frugal, but he was paying all of Mike's bills, which were also some of your bills.
Yeah, he paid our payments.
His family.
Right.
And doing basically what ought to be the role of a conservator.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't taking money for this.
No, he didn't. He wasn't getting paid. He did end up, now his my mother-in-law was also like the public trustee also of Colorado.
Hmm.
So she was very well known as well. So they both really came around as good parents. Now they both have passed on, you know. His dad's gone, his mother's gone, Mike is gone, but it all turned out to be better than a lot of cases that we've done on a radio show. A lot of cases where if someone gets any kind of money that comes in from an accident or something, $100,000, $200,000, they end up getting a guardianized by a perfect stranger, and then they end up getting paid. But that didn't happen in ours. That's why I'm shocked when I hear some of these stories, because I compare them to what happened to mine. And mine was a piece of cake compared to that.
Mm-hmm.
But Luann, get into the next part. Huh? Go ahead.
But, Luann, not necessarily the same with your mother's situation. It was the polar opposite. Polar opposite. And, you know, you look that there were connections there with your father-in-law, and I think you said your mother-in-law, and you look 20 years ago, let's say, maybe it was kind of bad, and you just didn't realize it. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe they started seeing people like your husband, your past husband, and then it's taken off, because Colorado is up there with the top five for the worst states, maybe the top three in the country. It's really bad for Colorado. So, it's hard to say, but night and day, the two situations, I think I can say on your behalf that one was pretty okay and the other one was torturous. You went through a terrible time with your mother and her guardianship, correct?
Yeah, correct. And that's why I kind of wanted to tell this story today exactly because it happened 18 years ago when he passed away. But I wanted to kind of, it's the polar opposite, exactly. Because when my father died...
And I just wanted to say, I held up a hand to say, I think also there were these elements that may have mediated what went on in those days. It's hard to say whether in fact things really were better, or whether things were better in your case for you,
right?
Because your father-in-law was the retired police chief.
That's...
Your mother-in-law was the public trustee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you had this sort of inside line on both the court system through your mother-in-law and the police force through your father-in-law, where each of them were in a highly respected and honorable position that required a certain degree of integrity to be in those positions, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And so it may be that there was this kind of this part of fortune that was on your side that made it so even if, God forbid, the courts were already experiencing a high degree of corruption as we see today, it may be that it didn't touch you or your case because it was mediated by people looking at the situation and going, well, I don't want to mess with him. He's the ex-chief of police, and I don't want to mess with her. She's the public trustee.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just going to hands off here. We're going to try to do right by this family. So there is that element that I just think bears keeping in mind, because, you know, that not everybody 20 years ago was probably so lucky.
I know, exactly.
I think there's a high likelihood that more people were, because I do believe that it has gotten way out of control and much worse.
So do you think do you think his position made a difference? I do in this case. I really do.
Oh, definitely. But let me say one thing. Unfortunately, that connection with your father-in-law did not go to help. It didn't help in any way, shape, or form with your mother's situation. Right?
No, not at all.
Who you were. They knew who you were related to, who your father-in-law was, you know, in that court, I'm sure. You could have said, look, I was a guardianship of my deceased husband and my father-in-law. You know who he is. And obviously the name dropping, if you did any, I hope you did, didn't play
right.
a factor into your parents' estate. How many antique cars were taken from your home?
We had 123 antique cars on the property. And we probably sold about 15 or maybe 20 of those before it all went into the probate court, because my sisters were the trustees. And we were doing a good job on the property. We had to clean up, you know, we had 123 antique cars, and I'm talking about the Grand Slam. You know, I'm talking about the 1955 Chevys, 56, 57, 58, 59.
Wow.
All of them from 55s. We had Henry J's. We had Studebakers. We had a huge collection. And when the courts got involved, you know, like my dad, he had a trust 10 years before all that happened. So, you know, the kids were happy with the trust that my dad did. But he just picked out the kids that he thought that could carry on his legacy. But I tell you what, you have any arguing family members, it's a whole different situation. And I thought about this.
Sorry to interrupt you. So just to be clear, so your father had a trust and he named certain family members, but he excluded others, rightfully so. He could have left a penny to one and everything to another. Is that what he did that basically was the catalyst for all the problems?
What he did is he put two sisters in charge with my mother, but he did name everybody as a beneficiary. But the brother was kind of jealous that he wasn't put in as an executor. He wanted to run the antique car business. I don't blame him. You know, I wanted him to do that as well. But it just got to where everybody wanted to be like the chief, and there just weren't enough Indians, is how I put it, you know. So I put it to where everybody was just arguing, and my mom wasn't acting normal at all after my dad passed away, and she started getting memory issues, and I would tell her one thing, and she would tell somebody else something different, so she was not able to hold up the end of being a trustee, but we daughters were working in there. I wasn't put on the trust, but my two sisters were, and I helped with that. So we were taking care of one property with 125 antique cars on it, with a 24 sheds or something like that. We had a Denver home, we had a Aurora home, we had cabins, we had five properties paid in full. Each one of them kids were going to get a house, so none of us would be put out into the street, and boy, that did not happen. They were all evicted out of their homes once the courts got involved. That's why I wanted to talk about this, because I'm not sure if it was because it wasn't as corrupt 20 years ago, or maybe it was. See the difference that maybe if I went back into a court again, it was going to go right. Because the first time it did with my husband, it was all okay. The second time was so disturbing how the judge just looked in there and said, hey, you got arguing family members. We're going to give it to a public trustee who went ahead and just jumped right in there and says, okay, we're actioning off all these cars, and, hey, we're going to sell all the property. We're like, wait a minute. Why is all this happening? This is our property. This is our deal. This is our mom and dad. This is our family.
This
should not be happening.
Not only did your family have all those antique cars and all of those properties, I recall, because I was right next to you for this part of your life, you also had pretty well worked out plans about taking certain properties and selling those and taking that money to fix up other properties.
Oh, we did
to
all
rent
that.
Those, and you did that.
We did that.
And you had plans to sell certain cars so that you could take and put money into other cars to really make them as valuable as they could be, because that car collection, if you had done your plan, would have been probably around $1 million car collection alone.
Let alone
the properties would have been in today's dollars. In today's dollars, you're probably up to $5 or $6 million.
Yes.
Because of the value of both the real estate and the properties, including those cars. This is what was liquidated so that these court officials could basically pay themselves,
they did,
and their family members to come in and clean out, take this stuff that belonged to your family. And literally,
I don't know what happened to it.
There was a company that was associated with one of the main people that was operating the whole trust.
Right.
That was a salvage company, and they went in and took all of the properties, but you know, there was jewelry, there was furniture, there was
I don't even know what happened to my stuff in my parents' house. I have no idea what happened to any of it.
Right.
It's kind of sad, but they went in there and they cleaned out some of this property, but we've heard all kinds of problems going on with these people many times before. But the problem I'm having at all is these courts gave this okay for them to go in and sell our property. And guess what? One of the properties is now a fire station. Can you believe that?
I always think of that. It's just, I mean, and nothing wrong with the fire station.
No.
You know, but just, you know, callous. Just, and you think of, like, you know, when my mother died, my sister was just, you know, in a rush to sell the house. She had an auction. And now I have very few things that belong to my mother, one of which I have is this silver bracelet. And it's nothing expensive. It's real silver. And I only take it off when I take a shower. Otherwise, I have it on. And it's just so sad that all of your mother's things and your father's things, strangers have. You know, they paid for them, so there's nothing that you can do. But it's just like our family members are treated like trash. And their loved ones, their children are treated doubly sometimes as bad. And I think about those cars for some reason, and I visualize you standing there, if you were there when they were towed out, and just the heartbreak that you must still have over what happened to your family.
It's heartbreaking, because every time I see a car auction or I see a 55 Chevy out there, I wonder if it's ours. I can't look at car collections.
So well.
I can't. Yeah, and it was
so well.
It was
cool.
Devastating to me, and it was one of the most hurtful things. And I'm telling you what, we had to sell the cars fast, because they had eviction notices on all the cars out there, and they were going to put that shit on the street if we didn't sell them all. So we had tow trucks coming. We had people that were coming, I think, from the courts even, to go through all that stuff. But I tell you what, it was one of the hardest experiences. And I sat on the property that last day. I ain't kidding you. The last day. And also that same day that we lost all that property is when my son-in-law mother died that day. So I'm like, man, I was having tragedy after another that day. I sat there and said, you know what? I am going to make something out of this. I am going to get the word out about this is so wrong what's happening to families. I ended up having to take my brother to my own home in a camper in the driveway for a year and a half. He was evicted.
For
the second time.
From the family properties that were fully owned by your parents and family.
Yeah.
He was evicted, but went by the court predator, what do they call him? Conservator.
They call him, yeah.
Happens
conservator.
Happens all the time.
So,
that guardians, their attorney, that a son or daughter is living in their parents' home rent-free because they want them there. They get put into guardianship, and one of the first thing is you know, threatening to evict them, you know, and they do. They get evicted, and no one cares. No one is treated like they're a person who has feelings, and you can guarantee that your mother would say, no, he's my son. I don't want him on the street, you know? It's just, but who filed a petition in there's guardianship?
Right. You know, what'd you say? Go ahead.
Who filed the petition to put your mom in guardianship?
I actually went to the public trustee. He told me I should grow some balls and I should go get my mom back. So I listened to her and I went over to the court and I filed to become an emergency guardian. And they gave it to me actually for a week, and I got my mom's phone put back on. I did all these things, and all of a sudden I get these papers coming in from my brother's attorney, my mom's attorney, saying, you've been revoked. We can't have you on as a guardian. We got to put our own people on as a guardian because your brother might hurt you. I said, yeah, I'll kick my brother's butt. Ain't going to happen. But they took me off as a guardian. There were three more that were put on draining our trust funds because it was coming out of the trust, and it kept dwindling and dwindling. And then after about 3 years of that, they finally put my sister and I in charge of my mom, the guardian, which Ruth and my sister and I, Ruth, we became the guardian of my mom for 8 years. And I had to do a yearly report.
And
I took what?
Yeah.
Ugh.
They
loved
Luann. When your mom was in the last facility, I mean, you said that everyone there loved your mom. They loved you and your sister and all the family going to visit your mom. And that's usually not the case. So you guys did a great, in a terrible situation, you guys really turned it around and gave your mother everything until the end.
Yeah, you know, and that's exactly what happened to my mom. My sister and I, all my sisters, you know, every one of them just came in and we took care of my mom, all the grandkids, all the kids, everybody got together. We took care of her. We gave her a great life, even though she was in a nursing home for the last 4 years of her life. She was happy to see her kids. I am so thankful to this day. They took all of the property. They sold it all. We did get a small inheritance, a very small little dinky thing. But after all the stories I've heard on this radio show, and of course, we're going to be writing a book about all this. Robin and I are in the phases of putting a book together, and it's coming around pretty nicely. In fact, it's all going in there. And there's so much to talk about because everybody doesn't get it. There's so many people that doesn't realize that the courts are not friendly nowadays. They are a place you want to stay away from. That's why when I went from my husband's court to the same judge, they're going to listen to this. They're going to come in and help my family. He's going to see what's going on, and none of that happened. I was shocked. I sat out in the parking lot once they gave our property to a trustee and said, hand over all the pocketbooks. I sat there out in the parking lot. I was just dumbfounded. I was shocked. I was just like, how could this be happening? How could we lose our playground with 125 antique cars on it? How could we be, you know, how could we lose? My dad had trust in us that we would take care of all this, but it wasn't us that failed. It was the judicial system that failed. We did not fail. You know, and I want that to put out to our listeners. We are the ones that did not fail at all.
And that's an important point for all of our listeners to understand. If you wind up in a probate court or in a family court and things don't go your way, it had nothing to do with whether or not you succeeded or failed.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what's going on.
Right.
What's going on is that someone else succeeded in taking what's rightfully yours.
That's
quite
what
often.
Happened. They succeeded
other individuals had a plan, and they worked that plan to defraud, in my estimation,
right.
my opinion, to defraud your family of what was rightfully theirs.
Right, and it's not theirs, it is ours. You're the heirs.
Yeah. It's not theirs.
We're the heirs, it's not theirs. And that's the thing that we've came up a lot about. So that's why it's really important that everybody pays attention to make sure there's no arguing in your family at all. If you're going to do a trust arguing, I mean, there's a lot of trusts that go accordingly, you know.
How do you do that? You know, when there's family dysfunction, when there's jealousy that one sibling thinks, you know, the parents or the parent favors one over the other, you know, that's the $20 million question. How do you keep the peace? I mean, thank God I am with my sister. I'm always on edge, but I mean, everything is 50-50. But when you're in the court system and you have an attorney, you know, who's doing the fighting for you, it's a really difficult situation. And it's just, you know, it's things that you would think would disqualify, like, I'll just bring this up, and I mentioned it to the two of you earlier before the show started, hearing the other day for Florence Eckert, I think she's 94, 96, she was in guardianship before, she managed miraculously to get out. She is deaf. She was a teacher at Bronx Science. I won't go through the backstory, but one of her students lit an M80 and went off in her ears. She's deaf. She's at a facility recently, and she is now in limbo. She's an emergency temporary guardianship. Her court-appointed attorney, who, of course, in Florida, does not get paid unless a guardianship stipulates to an emergency guardianship, she agrees. Never would agree. I know Florence, and she would never agree, and she would be vocal about it, and she was petrified that it would happen again. And it did. Unfortunately, she wasn't with it enough or trusting enough to sign a power of attorney. That being said, I looked at the application of the potential ETG. We were all on the hearing, and I asked the judge. She let me speak, which was miraculous. And I said, Your Honor, everyone, the lawyers and whoever, are so concerned about protecting Dr. Eckert's millions of dollars. But I said, I looked at, you know, Joe Schmo's application for guardianship. Your Honor, he had a bankruptcy last year. How is he going to be able to protect her money when he couldn't even protect his? A lot of people have bankruptcy. Not saying that you know, people get stuck in bad times, but you're supposed to be a professional guardian who will take over the finances of this alleged incapacitated person, or incapacitated if it happens. And, you know, the judge, you know, the attorney for the petitioner yells, objection, argumentative, this, that, and it's fact. He had a bankruptcy. Well, you know, the judge, I think he made it as if he was writing down, you know, what I said. And the guardianship ETG went through, and this gentleman with the bankruptcy is now Florence Eckert's guardian for the time being. So I don't know where I came from, you know, but to tell you that little story, but it is unbelievable what happens in these courts, and if it wasn't so horrific, it would be comical, because the laws are not followed. So That is just, you know, it's just a shame. And Florence Eckert, who is deaf, they're not even giving her hearing aids. Oh, no, we're not. She is going to just read our lips. She will become like a ventriloquist. She will be reading our lips. No, she needs, you know, hearing aids. They know nothing about her. But it's just another day in probate court, and it's just so sad that the public, in these courts, we cannot make a difference right now.
Yeah. So did you tell me earlier that she was already guardianized one time before?
She was she was put into a guardianship, I was about 2 years ago. She was in a facility, medical emergency, and Jewish Family Services became her guardian. She was deaf, and thank goodness she finally got a doctor who said, oh, no, she's brilliant. She's smart as a and she is...
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. I think we're losing you, Hillary.
You still on there, Hillary?
So she was brilliant, but she got a doctor who discovered that she was having
and let me just change my location and let me know if you still can't hear me. Anyway.
Okay, there you are.
She is profoundly deaf. She got a doctor to be president, and the guardianship was dissolved. We were waiting for her. She's in a facility, and I guess whatever the case was, she had a bill in pay, and the facility elevates in both a petition to put her into guardianship again, and everyone was waiting on the wings. And I have not seen in the 5 years I've been advocating anyone get out of guardianship twice. Have you?
No. Oh, my gosh. So whatever happened to, I just saw that article that you sent me about a professional guardian, Tracy Hudson's trial on 2019 charges delayed again.
Yes.
Do you have any information on that?
Too much information, yes. So Tracy Hudson, who was arrested for the first time in November 2019, is still out and about. She does have an ankle monitor, but she is free, basically, to live in her house right now. She was arrested, 30 felony charges. Her trial was supposed to start yesterday, but the week before, 2 weeks, she was found in a hotel room and supposedly tried to commit suicide. She was in the hospital for 2 weeks, very convenient time that she did that. And the judge yesterday said that they will have another pretrial in 2 months, July 11th. So as the saying goes, the can was kicked down the road again. And I'm really happy about one thing, that the state attorney's office, as of now, they are not giving any deals that the guardian and her attorney want. So as the guardian's attorney said, they've come to an impasse, and she's looking at, top 134 years, low end of sentencing would be 15 years. If she could get 15 years, it would be something. But as far as compensation, victims have been told, you're lucky if you get $1,000 back. And she sold millions. So anyway, the next hearing will be July 11th. Rebecca Fearley, who we know was notorious in the guardianship arena in Florida, she will be sentenced for her DNR crime sometime in June. I'll send you the link, Luann and Robin, I suppose. But most people don't think she'll get any time. She made a deal with the state. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Right.
But it's a long time coming.
And they said something like in this article that she had 29 court hearings already?
From the day she was arrested, I think it was, 1,225 days have passed. She's had 20 however many hearings, and not one time, and she tried to commit suicide. There's a police report. Not one time, and her daughter said she feels terrible about the vision of going to jail for 15 years, but not once did she, on her own volition, apologize to any of the elderly or disabled victims that she stole their money, their hard-earned money. Not once did she apologize to Lisa Martino for the fake libel slander suit that turned out in taking Lisa Martino's home that was paid for in full from under her. Not once did she apologize to advocates like me, who she sued three times for libel slander and a restraining order and no trespass. She has absolutely no remorse, and I have no sympathy whatsoever for her.
Because yeah, she sad. The whole thing
no,
is sad.
Right. It's sad.
You know, and don't you think that these judges that are allowing all this to happen, I mean, wouldn't you think that there should be more accountability with these judges that are allowing this to happen? I mean, if the judges were to come out and say, look, I believe that Ms. Eckert or whoever, who let's just say Jane Doe, should be in a guardianship, don't you think the judges say, why do you think that? What's the least restrictive thing we could do with her? Can we do something else? Does they have family? Do they not talk like
right,
that when they go into the court?
They never do, but also the thing is just consider, you know, look at Dr. Eckert, 94 years old, 96, let's say 94. She's in a facility. Her court-appointed attorney said, oh, no, I really couldn't talk with her. We're in 2023. There was no reason that her court-appointed attorney could not be in the facility with Dr. Eckert on his laptop doing a Zoom like we get on these hearings and let Florence Eckert see what was going on and make a comment. He said she was physically
right.
Fine. She seemed fine, but she couldn't communicate. But no, she should have been there. And time after time after time, a alleged incapacitated person or incapacitated person, their presence is waived at the hearing. And that is not good for me. Everything is about them.
No.
They're paying for everything. And they're, and you know, paying everyone and their mother, and they're not at the court hearings? Insanity.
Yeah.
That is, to me,
yeah, to, me it's
to me, that is unethical. That is absolutely unethical.
Yes.
Their lawyers take a pledge. They're required by their profession to uphold certain ethical, to live up to certain ethics. They take a pledge to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. They take pledge, you know, there's certain things that they are pledged to do and
to go backwards.
Vigorously represent the individual that they're advocating for.
Yeah, they should be advocating not to put him into a guardianship, put him into a guardianship,
right.
Or
and,
to at least restrictive alternative.
And the fact that they hold these hearings without that person being present, that should never happen. That should never happen.
Insanity.
Basically, That's a violation of the spirit of the law that says each of you have a right to confront your accuser.
So
if you're accused
right.
of a crime,
oh.
you as a person accused of a crime have the right under the American system of jurisprudence to confront your accuser and say, what do you mean I committed this crime? And hear the evidence against you. This is not the case.
Right,
and these gone around the law. They've you know done a little suasion that sort of moved around, just sort of drove around the barrier, drove around the hump in the road. So they didn't, you know, so they didn't have to abide by the spirit of the law that says you should be represented. You should have the right to confront that person who's accusing you, because it is an accusation. If I accuse you of being incompetent, well, I can go to court and accuse you in absentia. You don't even have to know anything about it. First thing you might know about it is when, knock, knock, knock. Who is it? It's your new guardian. And these are the armed men that are going to escort you with me to your new home. You don't live here anymore.
Right.
I've got papers to say I now own this. And, oh, take off that ring. That's mine,
right.
too.
Right.
You know.
We know people that the guardian has gone in and said, take your wedding ring off your finger. It's happened. And, you know, all these little slang words, you know, here they file a motion or a petition to enjoin that alleged incapacitated person, meaning get their, you know, their butts out of the house. But, you know, just picture this, a criminal court setting, right? Mm-hmm. Someone is on trial, or someone is accused of, let's say, attempted murder or some sort of burglary. Nothing would go forward if that defendant wasn't in court. Nothing would go further.
Yeah.
But in probate, oh, no, they're not here. No, yeah, he waived Dr. Eckert's appearance. No, not going to be here. Two out of it. It is mind-boggling how all of a every single right can be taken away from an individual, and they are not even there in that court to even speak up for themselves.
Even
and
if
no
know,
one
whether
would
they
believe this.
Stand up for themselves or not, they have the right to.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's so sad that a lot of these people that are being put into these nursing homes and all that, or people with dementia, you know. And when I think about if they were to take my husband when he was that ill and put him in there, that would have been awful. God, awful if that happened. You know, he did actually end up in jail a couple times, and they kept making him go in through probation. And I kept telling the courts, he doesn't even know what he's doing. Why do you keep making him go to probation? And then they finally sent him down to this place called Pueblo to put him into a crazy house to get him to where he could understand if he knew what was right in a court of law. So they said, okay, he can go back there, and nothing happened. It was still the same stuff over and over and over again. And it was just one of the most upsetting things a person could ever go through, you know. And I had to go to, when they came up to me and said, can you be a legal guardian? I said, well, I got to go clear up five different courtrooms saying I'm his legal guardian now. I couldn't even go down to this mental hospital and go to somebody, and yet I was the guardian. And it's like, wait a minute. So I had to go to court after court and give him the papers from this other court to give to another court to get that release from a different court. It was quite a deal going on for a long time. But I did overcome all that, and it's been 18 years that he passed away today, and it was the saddest day of my life besides, of course, losing my mother when she passed, you know. But I understand where a lot of these families come from when they're in court and they can't see their mom. I've got a lady right now in Nebraska. If anybody's out there in Nebraska, please get a hold of me. There's a lady out there where they have kept her from her husband. This lady, her husband's only 62 years old. She's 60. She's about my age. And I'm telling you right now, that has to be one of the saddest things, is to be kept away from your own spouse when they're sick. I mean, I went through that with my husband. I couldn't even imagine them keeping me away from him, and I was not knowing what was going on with him. So if anybody's out in Nebraska, I'm not going to mention her name, but she's going through a lot of issues out there right now. If anybody's from Nebraska, please call into our show. I'm going to actually give you our phone number to the radio show. It's 845-241-9962. You press a 1. 845-241-9962. You press a 1. And that will get you into our live studio here. You will be recorded live, and then you'll be able to. There are all these stories that we've told,
are archived.
And, you know, and we're going to tell right now, we are not attorneys. We're not any kind of a judge. We're not. We are not doing the law. We're not going against anybody.
We're not qualified to give you legal advice.
We follow the First Amendment.
We don't offer,
you know,
any legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
We just talk about our own experiences and our own perspectives and our own points of view. But it shouldn't, under no circumstances, be considered any kind of advice of what you should do, or you need to do this, or you need to do that.
Right.
We don't offer that advice.
And we exercise our First Amendment rights as well.
This is what happened to us. This is what happened to, and we have guests that come in and say, this is my life. This is what's happening to my life. This is what happened to me.
Right.
And
these shows aren't intended to defame anybody or get anybody upset or anything. We're just talking about how things should not be allowed in our society.
Well, actually, I hope
you know?
That it does get people upset.
Well,
because
I
do hope that people will realize that this kind of thing can happen to you. And I hope that that upsets you enough to actually educate yourself about how you might be able
right.
to defend yourself
right.
from this kind of attack. And it is an attack. It is a kind of war, warring against an individual when you steal them out of their home in broad daylight with armed men and then take everything they own. That's, you know, that's a criminal act if you do it without the authorization of someone in a black dress and with a wooden hammer saying
right.
it's okay with me.
Right. A few other things we want to cover tonight is that Rob and I, we've been working with America United International. Now, that was where Zena Crenshaw, actually, she passed away like in September of last year. She was bringing all this to the United Nations. And so we've been working with Linda Parker Brown, and about 7 or 8 of us have gotten together. And we actually are creating America United International. And there's a lot of exciting things coming on there.
There are.
That we're going to actually be bringing on soon, within, I would say, probably 2 or 3 weeks, probably Linda Parker Brown, a couple of the associates that we're working with, some attorneys, to talk about what's going to go on and how we're going to go after FEMA for all these families that's going on.
And this is an excellent time to investigate America United International and get involved with them, because this is right at the moment when the wave is cresting. We're about to catch a good ride.
Right.
I talk like a surfer because I did a little bit of body surfing when I was in California growing up.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like there's a certain point when it's really the best time to get on board with something. And this is about that moment in time
right.
with America United International for those that are...
To carry on the Zena Crenshaw legacy along
with...
And
that legacy being
yes.
holding courts accountable and actually holding the individuals in those courts accountable to the laws that they pledge to uphold, and creating a set of consequences that are real, tangible consequences, which may very well mean that individuals that have been defrauded in courts, like we often talk about.
Like Linda Parker Brown says, the fix is in all the time. And I love that statement because she's right.
We may be able to come to the day when reparations are made. Reparations.
Yeah, and Zena Crenshaw said at one time, I'll never forget it, she says that the evolution will be televised. And I stick by that because it's we're working on this. There's some great people that are involved. There's attorneys. There's all kinds of stuff getting involved. We're going to bring that legacy forward. We're excited about this. And also, Robin just launched a new book that came out along with my son-in-law.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and
now for
oh my
a word
gosh.
From our sponsor.
Yes, we've got some exciting news about that.
We long awaited our book. Lee Riefel and Robin Austin are the authors, so one of them is me. And we launched our book on Amazon. You can find it on Amazon. It's a book called The Software of Your Mind, How Changing Your State of Mind Changes Everything. And it's an exploration of some of the circumstances of our own lives and how those circumstances developed in a way that it created some serious problems for us in our own approach to living our lives and in our own approach to how we thought about ourselves. And it was each of us had to overcome certain things that were real challenges to our own mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And as we grew through that process and learned the techniques and strategies to be able to build a life out of a really challenging circumstances and extreme
beautiful
difficulties.
Beautiful book. It's a beautiful book.
We discovered that it was a real labor of love, because what we've created is something that now is kind of a roadmap and a guidebook to those that are in the midst of great difficulties in their life, great challenges in their life, hurtful moments in their life, and get through the most difficult times in your life. You can get through it, and this book is a way that the right book at the right time may save your life, and this is that kind of book.
Yeah,
so
you can
pick it up now at Amazon. Look for The Software of Your Mind, How Changing Your State of Mind Changes Everything. You can also go to thesoftwareofyourmind.com and pick up your 2 free gifts there. So I hope you'll buy the book, but even if that's something that's a little out of your reach right now, at least go and get your free gift at thesoftwareofyourmind.com.
Yeah, it's really exciting because during that process, we've learned how to write books, and then you and I are coming up with a book of our own about guardianship, so that's going to be coming out. We're hoping to put a deadline on there in December to have this book out. I'm really excited to have this because we've been through legislation. We've been to all these different agencies to talk about the problems going on. Now we're going
to
put it into a – now we're going
to
put it in a book. We're going to put it in a book, and we also have the Judicial Integrity Project said he would love to contribute. Also, I want to ask each and every one of my listeners, please, everyone that's been on to our radio show, we would like for you to come up with a paragraph. We're going to pick out about 50 of those. And we're going to – I want you to talk about the judicial system, how we need to – it needs to be fixed. It needs to be solved. It needs to be torn apart, whatever you think.
Each of our guests has had their own unique perspective.
Right.
So we hope that you'll bring your own unique perspective about what you saw when you were involved or are involved in the judicial system as it is today, and what might be – some strategies that you could,
mm-hmm.
could suggest that might help. But really, just a paragraph, just a, you know, just something.
Everyone that's been on our show fits in a paragraph. And we're going to actually pick those out. We're going to put them in the book with your okay. We're going to do that. And how you do that is you just send it to Face Us Radio, F-A-C-E-U-S Radio at hotmail.com, and send in your paragraph with the permission to put it in our book, to talk about what's wrong with our judicial system and why we need to get it fixed. Not too much per se about your case, about your own family, but what's going on with our judicial system, and be wise about what's before you go into a court.
And we also welcome those who would like to write a paragraph about how Face Us, the radio show, and the organization has impacted your life personally.
Yes.
If it's had a positive impact on your ability to deal with whatever you had to deal
and
with,
I'm gonna get,
or on any aspect of your life that has made your life better, we would appreciate that because
right. And I'm gonna. I also have Marcy and Hillary also wrote up a whole page. Well, you, Hillary, you're on notice that we're gonna get a whole page from you or so about you know what happened to it to you, and so we can put that into the book. Marcy gave us this great explanation of what happened. We had Marty Oakley that she. She gave us a lot of insights, and she recently passed away, and John LeCron, he put in a really good tribute to her, so I asked him today if I could use that in a book. He said yes, but we got a beautiful tribute to Karen Huffer, who was also on a radio show. She passed away. Dina Crenshaw, we're going to get some literature on her. That's also passed away, about all these big advocates. They're going in our book. I think that we're going to give a beautiful dedication to each one of them people.
Their lives may have
people.
Been cut short, but their legacy will live on.
Yeah, we're carrying the torch. But anyway, Hillary, do you have anything else you want to talk about? Because we are going to go ahead
we're winding down.
Winding
now.
Down.
Winding down, brothers and sisters. No, just to say we are beginning the month of May, so we are doing and we are achieving things in letting the American public know what is going on. I feel confident that we are on the road to victory in this country for sure. And the road can be weary. And Robin and Luann, we know it can be very weary, and it can also be so invigorating, helping people and trying to make change. And that's where I am tonight. Next Wednesday, I don't know.
Yeah.
Tonight, I'm pumped up, I'm fired up, and I'm ready to go to do whatever we can and have to do, because we have to admit it. Neither of us and most of our listeners, we didn't know what guardianship was. And now it's like every time one of my kids bring home a permission slip, it says the parent or guardian of Aiden Daniel. Oh, my, I cringe and all that. But guess what? If you don't know, now you know. Everyone who's been
right, and
through
I just wanted to say, I got the cutest little person called me up the other day, and they said, ma'am, I answered the phone. I said, hello. And she goes, ma'am, are you an advocate? And I said, an advocate? Oh, I said, you mean an advocate? She goes, yes, I'm in a nursing home and I need an advocate. I asked her what her situation was and somebody to give to me, for her.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was the cutest thing, and I just told her, you might want to do this and this and this. And I asked her if she was in guardianship. She goes, no, but I think I need to be put into guardianship. I said, ma'am, you do not want that. You do not want that. You have no idea. So I talked her out of that. I talked her out of a lot of things. I put her on the right path, and hopefully, like I say, we're not attorneys here, so we just give what experiences that we've had on this show and tell people, please try to avoid guardianship. Please try to avoid the courts.
Yeah.
Please try to, go ahead and get the state planning done. Do whatever you got to do to stay, healthy, wise,
right? I told a friend of mine, Sonia, today, we're saying, what can we do? Most people have their advanced directives and they're just pushed out and they mean nothing. And at one of the meetings for the Guardianship Improvement Task Force, there was this guy, Tom Hall. His resume would make anyone cringe at what they haven't done, and he has. And I said, Mr. Hall, do you have any connection to guardianship? He says, when they tried to put my sister in a guardianship, she had all of her advanced directives. She was in a hospital. I got her out, but it really made me think of what to do. And he said that what he has done is he's gone into a room with just white walls, no furniture, nothing, and recorded himself to let everyone know what he wants and doesn't want. But the public is getting educated, and I will say this, Luann, that I give you so much credit, because losing your husband in front of you was horrific, to say the least, and being his guardian, even though he might have not been so nice to you, and you understanding that he had issues because of his accident is so commendable, and then going through, even though you had done such a service for him, and being pushed aside with your mother until the last 2 years of her life, and going forward, and instead of trying to forget everything that happened to you, you are reliving it every day to help strangers that you more than likely will never meet. So I'm proud to say that you're my friend, and you are a role model and a hero for what you and, of course, Robin and I try to do on a daily basis. So, again, I'm grateful for the two of you.
Yeah, well, we're grateful for you and Marcy as well. We've come up with these great radio shows, and we've had a lot of people talking about it. We even got into a Spanish magazine lately. We're going to be doing a book. We're going to be getting everybody's information put in there. I think we've talked about it. Judicial Integrity Project said they'll help us out with some chapters. We're going to be doing some better work here, but it all came down to, I saw my husband struggle, I saw my parents struggle, my family struggle, my kids. People coming to us from all over the United States. They're coming over, we've got people listening to us all over the nation, international radio show. We've got people listening to us in Germany. We've got people listening to us in Japan the other day. We've had people in Canada. We've had people listen to us all over. And I know that Australia and many places are having the same kind of issues,
mm-hmm.
And I've reached out to the Spectrum Institute, trying to get them onto our radio show to talk about shared decision-making. We've reaching out to different people to come onto our radio show. So hopefully we can keep these radio shows going for quite a long time. And also, Marty Oakley, thank God, she's got some great advocates out there that are keeping her radio shows alive, Cause. And you've got Marcia Joyner, you've got Debbie Dahmer, all of them are keeping the radio shows, the legacy going of Marty Oakley.
Mm-hmm.
Marty Oakley was, oh my gosh, my heart is still broken over her. I love her so much.
Mm-hmm.
And she will always be with
Cause
us.
And Debbie.
Yeah.
And they're doing great work.
They're doing great work.
Really grateful for them carrying that on. And
yeah.
I tell you to go listen to them, but they're our competition.
Yeah. We love
those
guys. Of course,
I'm joking.
We
of
love
course
those
I'm
guys.
Joking.
Marty and Oakley and I would
them.
Go, yeah.
You have to divide your time. That's okay.
Yeah.
we're archived. You could go listen to us later.
So we'll be back again next week. I'm not sure who the guest is, but I'm sure we'll figure it out real soon. Hillary, have a good night. Robin, good night. All of us have a good night.
Good night.
And
good night to all of our listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are be here without you. We appreciate you and we honor you.
Right.
And we're fighting for you and we're listening to you.
Right. Remember, all our shows are recorded. They're archived. You're listening to Faceless Radio with Robin and Luann, and you got Marcy and Hillary.
And you can find them archived at blogtalkradio.com/hiddentruthrevealed.
Yep. And our phone numbers all the time is 845-241-9962. You press the 1 if you ever want to get onto our radio shows.
And have something
and,
to say.
And we want to dedicate this whole story to Michael. I love
Fleming.
You. Michael Fleming, I love you. You're still up there watching above us. Mom, Marion, you're still watching us. You know, Marcy's mom is up there. We've got Marty. We've got Zina.
We've got more guardian angels
up there than you can even imagine. But remember, justice requires
transparency and accountability.
And giving up is not an option.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you later, Hillary. Keep your chin up. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. We're going to put on NASCA now.
Did you know
Thank
that
you
elders
for
and others are losing their rights to liberty
commercial.
And property?
Thanks.
Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit stopguardianabuse.org.